Hello, and thank you for listening to this week's episode of Hereabouts, Asian American Midwest Radio. Hereabouts is produced by WFHB and Indiana University's Asian Culture Center. We ask critical questions about identity, culture, community, and shared assumptions. We air every other Wednesday from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. in the evening. My name is Belle, and I'm a junior double majoring in International Law and Institutions in Spanish. Today, I'm here with Maya, who is a member of the Filipino American Association and the Asian American Association, and is also a musician. So, before we get started, Maya, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi everyone, thank you so much for having me. My name is Maya Ruiz Law. I'm a violin performance and psychology major at the Jacobs School of Music. I'm originally from a suburb of Chicago, and on campus, I'm part of the Filipino American Association that's been my home away from home for the past 4 years. And I'm also involved with Classical Connections, which is a Jacobs organization that performs at local nursing homes and community outreach concerts. Stuff like that. In my free time, I love painting, trying to learn how to make new dishes. I'm not the greatest cook, but trying to experiment more with my cooking skills, walking around, hanging out with my friends in Bloomington. Yeah.
Awesome. So you mentioned Classical Connections and FAA and a bunch of other things you're involved on campus. So I was wondering if you could expand a little bit more about, what these organizations do. And since it is Women's History Month, I was just wondering if these organizations had any events concerning or uplifting women of color.
Sure. So I can start with FAA. I've got my sweatshirt on right now, our merch. So FAA for Women's History Month. I don't think we had any specific events, but I know that we definitely brought it up during our meetings. And, our board, our upper board is me along with two other women. So we do have lots of women involved on our board, huge part of our decision-making process, I think, which is always nice, to have other women alongside you, like working as a team. I think it helps us run really smoothly is that we all, get along and we all can connect and relate with each other. In terms of Classical Connections and Jacobs as a whole, I know there were so many events. There's always so many that are happening every day in the music school, so it's sometimes it's kind of hard to keep track. But definitely there's been recitals and guest lectures, and I can't even list them all, but I know all throughout the month there were a lot of different events happening. And I think the classical music world as a whole is definitely trying to acknowledge the disparity between men and women historically in the industry, because for the longest time, women weren't really in the picture. If we think back to how classical music started and who were the ones composing and performing and making classical music, and now it's been so exciting, I think, to see such a shift in the classical music world. And every day, I think I get a little bit more like optimistic and hopeful about the direction that the industry is headed, just because there is so much more inclusivity now, or at least an acknowledgement that there wasn't for a long time, which I think is awesome and great. And I really love that.
Beautifully said. That is a perfect segue into my next question, which was kind of about your fields of study. So you mentioned you're studying at Jacobs as well as in the College of Arts and Sciences for psychology. So you've kind of touched on this a little bit within your with your previous answer, talking about how Jacobs has become more inclusive. But in your opinion, what really is diversity within these spaces, in academia as well as in musical academia? And what do you think can be improved upon? Because, like you mentioned, like there has been progress, but probably not in, I mean, things aren't perfect now, as is everywhere else and in every other field of study. So I was just wondering what your opinion on that is.
Yeah, I think that's a huge question for sure. I guess in terms of psychology and a lot of, the liberal arts in general, I guess maybe similar to classical music, for a long time, women really weren't researching and women weren't publishing and women weren't educating. And now I think I've had more female professors in my psych classes than male professors, which is not a bad thing, not a good thing, it's just a cool thing. And I think, especially in psychology, where for such a long time, women's psychiatric problems were just kind of thrown aside as just general craziness or insanity. It's really interesting in our classes to kind of look back through history and just see how wrong people were for such a long time. And now I think, especially with scientific studies, it's just there's a lot more objectivity and or at least acknowledgement that, hey, we should look in to these other groups or these marginalized groups that maybe weren't researched for a really long time, especially women of color. I think that's like the least researched group possible, especially in healthcare and mental health care, where it's so prevalent and so important that I think there are definitely more initiatives and more projects being undertaken to look into how we can assist those communities. And then shifting to classical music, I kind of mentioned earlier, but I do think there's been a huge shift in the industry kind of as I've grown up. So I started playing violin when I was 5, and now I'm 22. And in those years, you can kind of just see this really cool progression of more and more women being represented in the industry. Like when I was younger, I think the only female violinist I really knew, and maybe this was just me not knowing a lot of female violinists, but it was Hilary Hahn. And we all looked up to her and we thought she was so cool. And she still is. She's super cool. And she was just kind of our role model for being like, oh, that he's a really cool, strong woman performing all the time. And she does it on her terms and she kills it every time. But I really didn't know many female composers until maybe middle school or even high school. We just never learn about that in our music classes growing up. We hear Bach and Mozart and Beethoven and all these big European white men in our classes, which of course they're important to the history of the genre, but I don't think we talked about a woman once in those classes. And then in high school, I think, and this is I think where I started noticing more that, oh, hey, like women are being included more on programming. There's like so many projects and initiatives to go out and find works by women composers and include those on our programming and not just, let's do a Beethoven symphony and then let's do a Mozart overture. And then maybe we can also do like a short piece by Debussy. And then there's no really representation there. So I think in high school and then especially now in my 4 years at Jacobs, it's just been like a boom of more inclusive projects, I think, and not just here, but everywhere in the industry, which is really cool.
Yeah, no, I resonated with your answer on so many multiple points because you touched on so many different things. But the thing about when you mentioned psychology, and I remember reading something. I think my source might have been Twitter, which is not the greatest place for news. But I remember reading that they only recently. So you know how they test like period products, like pads and stuff like
Right.
that, and only like recently did they actually use like real like blood or something because they had been
Oh,
using
interesting.
water previously, which is so interesting and so wrong on so many levels because
Yeah.
it's not the same kind of like consistency or
No.
I don't know, which is like might be a little bit TMI, but I remember seeing that and then also like kind of throughout college and high school how we've had some discussions about how a lot of like scientific experiments, psychology, as well as other sciences, kind of like they're kind of tailored towards men and their preferences. So I remember like reading about, I forget the pharmaceutical drug name, but like they only tested on male participants, and like we're kind of like the scientists were kind of shocked why like female patients we're having like, you know, more or less potent symptoms and stuff like that. So it's really interesting to think about because, like, whenever science is presented to us, it's kind of like objective, right? And it's kind of like, this is a fact, or like, we've proven it, and this is like, this is what it is. But you never really think about, okay, like, who are the people who are conducting these experiments, as well, like, if their sample is super representative for like the population that they're trying to, you know, target or, you know, prove. So I thought that was really interesting.
So speaking of like diversity in programming and classical music, something that I'm working on and I'll be performing on Saturday is my senior recital, which is a blend of Filipino and Scottish works from composers from both places. And it was just kind of an idea I had in the back of my mind for a while, with my mom being from the Philippines and my dad being American with Scottish ancestry on his mom and dad's side. So I thought, okay, this would be kind of a really cool thing to explore. And then I finally got the opportunity to put this all together for my upcoming recital. And it took a lot of, I think, exploration and just kind of like looking around on YouTube about who are the Filipino composers who have written things for violin and who are Scottish composers, because I didn't know either when I first started. I think I could name probably 20 German composers and a bunch of French composers and Italian, but we really, I think Scottish classical music was overlooked for a while because of their relationship with England. And then the Philippines, classical music really only emerged after colonization from the Spanish. So these were both kind of like overlooked groups, I guess, in the field. And I just kind of did a lot of Googling around and finding pieces that I thought might be cool and might sound nice. And I found that the modern piece I'm playing was actually written by an IU graduate in the 1960s. And he's now an ethnomusicologist in the Philippines. And so I was able to like email with him and find out more about his piece, which was really cool. And I think is one of the great things about like social media these days, was because I found the piece through a research paper for a class, reached out to the performer on Facebook Messenger, who messaged me back and gave me the composer's email, and I was able to email the composer. So it was kind of a really cool way of just like scavenger hunting my way around for this piece, which was really fun. But yeah, I think my teacher said this has to be like the first time we've seen a Filipino Scottish recital at this school, because probably he thinks probably no one's paired these two together, which I was like, well, that's kind of cool. And you know, I'm really excited to play it for my friends who none of them have heard it before, because these pieces have never been performed at an IU recital before. So I'm really excited.
That's wonderful that it's going to be a first. I mean, not like that it's like, you know, I mean, there should be more Filipino and Scottish representation, but, you know, it's cool that you're the first and you're doing it, and that's really awesome. Yeah, and oh, one point, I went to your junior recital last year, and when you talked about how, like, you know, music is kind of like a common language and everyone kind of understands music in their own way, it was really cool. I don't think I told you this, but I was talking to Anastasia about it after your recital, and I was like, you know what? I was like, Maya's performance was so good because I listened to you and I really like sat there and like reflected on my life. Such a weird thing to say, but like I kind of like remember the pieces like taking me through like different parts of my life, which was like so cool to
Oh,
experience
that's so cool.
within
I had no
the
idea.
moment. No, yeah, I don't think I ever told you, but I was like, oh, that was so
That's
cool and
awesome.
interesting. Like, I did not expect to like, you know, sit and like kind of have like a reflection on my own life on this like
Was
Saturday
totally my intention, and I
afternoon.
definitely wasn't freaking out while I was performing, but that makes me so happy.
No, yeah, no, it was great. And I mean, this program sounds super exciting. And I'm sure, well, you talked a little bit about the process that took you from, you know, conceptualizing the idea to kind of putting this program together. And I'm sure there were some pieces that didn't end up making it into the program that you currently have. And I'm sure it was extremely difficult to kind of narrow that down. I kind of wanted to ask you, like, what was your elimination process like? Like, how did you end up settling on these pieces?
Yeah, that's a really good question. One of them, so a lot of these I actually found through a YouTube playlist compilation that someone had just made of Filipino classical music. And I originally came across it for a research paper for a music history class last year. So a year before my recital was even planned. And I was just like, oh, this is really cool. And then through like exploring the different artists and compositions that were on that page, I kind of started to get an idea of, oh, I could actually perform some of these if I could find the music. And that was the hardest part, was actually getting access to the music, because so we have something called IMSLP. It's like a universal music library of all the works that are in public domain now. So I think everything before 1930-ish, I can't remember the copyright laws, but something like that. And it's, we use it every day. It's like all the works by like every classical composer ever, as long as it's before copyright. And so I tried to find a lot of these pieces on there or just on the internet, and they just weren't there. Like for one of them, I really wanted to play this concerto that was written, I think, in like 2014, 2018, something like that, by a really famous film score composer in the Philippines. But I just couldn't find a like copy of the music anywhere. And I even like emailed the publishing company that he works with, and they said, oh, sorry, we don't have it. So I don't know if he like is the only one with the copy, and I couldn't get his contact information. So I said, okay, well, you know, maybe not this one. And so I was able to kind of pair up a bunch of smaller pieces to go along with the modern piece, because it does have, I did want it to be a certain time length, like around an hour. That's kind of like pretty standard for our recitals. So it was just kind of a matter of like picking, took a while to kind of find pieces that I really liked and were passionate about without them being like too simple, I guess. I think that was the hardest part.
Yeah, that does sound pretty hard. Like kind of like you mentioned, kind of like a scavenger hunt. Kind of like writing a paper, but much, much harder. Yeah. Because you need to be reaching out to people and asking them for their work, essentially. But that sounds really cool. I know some artists like kind of, you know, create like some sort of like narrative with the pieces that they have. I was wondering if you had like a specific reason for your sequences, or like, you know, was there a particular reason why like you chose one to go to be at the, like to be first or last?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I don't know if there's ever like a perfect order of how you should program your pieces. I just, once I had picked them, I kind of figured, okay, I kind of want to group all the Filipino pieces together because three of them are pretty short. So I didn't think it would make sense to split those up because they are so short. And I knew that the Scottish piece would be the longest, so probably that would go at the end. And then I kind of had to figure out, okay, what's going to come first and then second and then third. So there's six total pieces on there. And for the three shorter Filipino pieces, I kind of wanted to start with like a big dramatic one. So it worked out really well that there's the habanera that I'm playing is very dramatic and kind of fast and showy. So I thought, okay, that might be like a good start to it. And then kind of move through the different pieces. And then at the end, I would have my like longer Scottish piece. And then my friend actually arranged a fiddle folk tune for us to all play at the end together, which is technically a surprise because I don't think anyone really knows that it's happening. But these are like some of my best friends. They're the members of my quartet, and we're really excited to end the recital that way.
Yeah, but that's really cool. Kind of sticking to the theme of music, and then we might pivot into something else. But I was just wondering, I know we talked about this in class with Christoph and the rest of our class, but I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about the relationship between music and advocacy.
My first, I think, experience with music as like a tool for social change was my freshman year. I was in the new music ensemble, and this was all during COVID, so everything was very spread out. I think there was like four or five people allowed to be in a group at one time, and we were all sitting super far away from each other, which made it really hard to sometimes play together because you're like on opposite ends of the room. And I got assigned to play this piece by Jonathan Bailey Holland, and it was called Synchrony. And it was written, I think, 2014, 2015, around that time, in response to, I think it was the Ferguson protests. If not that one, then something similar, part of the BLM movement. And I didn't know the piece at all, and I saw this recording online, and I watched the whole thing. I was like fixed to my screen. It was so attention grabbing because they basically the whole idea of the piece is they're making a statement about police brutality. And they were, so the way that we have our bows on the string, if you move it really quick and really fast, kind of in a horizontal direction, you can make a wind sound, like a whoosh kind of sound. And the same for wind players, if they're kind of breathing hard but not so strong that they make a note, they can have that breath of air. And that was kind of repeated throughout the piece to mimic, I think it was Eric Garner who said, "I can't breathe," because the police were suffocating him. And I was like, oh my gosh, like I was a freshman, I kind of didn't really realize pieces like that existed yet, just because in high school, I think it's pretty common for us to kind of just stick with the standards and you're going to play the standard repertoire and that's how it's going to go. And, you know, that's a whole different conversation about how to teach violin. But so this was like my first exposure to a piece that was also political. And that was just really eye-opening and really cool to be able to play that. It also was like a multimedia piece because it included audio clips from protests that would be played at certain points in the piece. Or I think there was like a speech from Barack Obama that was played during the piece. And so that was just a really cool first introduction into like this new world of like music with social change.
Yeah, no, those sounds like really cool projects. Yeah, and one thing I wanted to add to your answer, I think the Asian Culture Center and a PhD Jacob student or a doctoral Jacob student named Daishuan, they
Yes.
did a little kind of like commemoration of like the 1 year anniversary of when the anti-Asian hate crime happened on campus with one of our IU students. And it was really like you said, eye-opening for me specifically because I had never seen or heard kind of music very explicitly used to convey like not a political message, but you know, kind of like more like darker or like more serious or kind of like real life events, I guess. Because you know, it was really interesting to like listen to the music and see how you know, some like choices that Daishuan ended up making was like they kind of had like really beautiful like music inspired by the Beijing Opera, and then they would like kind of cut into that with very sudden like violin and viola like and like sounds so that it was kind of like to represent the stabs from the attack, which was really interesting and cool to listen to. So yeah, I just wanted to add on. I thought that was really cool. I don't know if you have done this before, but we've talked a lot about, you know, other people's pieces. And you know, how you've played them and how you've listened and learned from them. But have you ever composed anything before? Or if you
No.
haven't, well, like, what I guess this is kind of a very broad question, but what would you like to write? Like, what would you like to
Oh
make?
my God. I think the most I've ever written is like, I know in high school I had to write like a little piano theme to go for someone's short film, which like I basically just took the theme from the movie Up and I flipped it around and called it a day because I was in high school and I didn't know any better.
Hey,
Someone
it was
said, da
efficient.
da da da, I went da 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 da. And then it was fine. And, it was high school. I don't think I'm going to get copyright struck for that. But something that my teacher, Mark Kaplan here at IU, encourages is for us to write our own cadenzas for our concerto, or especially for Mozart, but maybe he does it for other concertos. It's kind of like our rite of passage as freshmen is that you have your Mozart concerto and your cadenza, which is basically just a solo for you to freestyle on your instrument. And there's some that are really popular that are already like in the music or that other people have written that are really popular and most people play. And our teacher says, okay, those are nice, but I think you can write your own. But he encourages us to write our own cadenzas. And it still uses material from the piece that we're playing, but it's our own kind of spin on it. And it was really cool at the end of last semester. We have a bunch of new freshmen in the studio, and a lot of them were working on Mozart and brought in their own cadenzas. And even though a lot of them were playing the same piece, they all sounded different, which was really cool. And they were all homemade, they were all handwritten. So I think that's a cool project that maybe he said. I don't, like, it's been 3 years, you should write another one, is what he told me to do, which I haven't gotten around to. But so maybe I could start with something more simple like that.
Yeah, no, I can't imagine how hard it would be to kind of come up with your own composition. I remember when I was taking piano, so I took piano as a kid at Jacobs, because my family and I, we lived here when my mom was getting her PhD from IU, and she decided to enroll me into the Young Pianist program at Jacobs. It was a great time. I had so much fun, but I remember, like, I think one of my friends got me this, like, n music notebook, like, with, like, the lines and everything, and then I, like, brought it to class one day with, like, my teacher, and she was like, oh, you have, like, your own notebook, and she was like, do you want to, like, write something? And I was like, 8-year-old me was like, I don't care, like, sure. And then we ended up writing something super simple, but I just, and it was mainly just, like, a bunch of chords that I just was like, oh, that sounds cool. Let's put it in. But it was such a fun process. So I know we hopped around a little bit and talked about a bunch of things today, but if there is one thing you would like the listeners to take away from this episode, what is it?
I think something that I've really focused on like the past few years here at IU is just like exploring my own identity and like getting comfortable with who I am and what my heritage is and connecting with my heritage, like whether it's through Filipino American Association or through music or through, like making really strong friendships. Like those are all part of your identity. So I think I would want to encourage people to like really explore the things that maybe you don't know about yourself yet or that are part of your heritage and that are part of who you are.
Yeah, 100% that. And I think IU's a great place to kind of explore that for for people who are listening that are freshmen. There are so many clubs to get involved in, and there's so many ways you can discover who you are, kind of in your like a new setting, which is cool and amazing. But anyways, on that note, thank you, Maya. And thank you for listening to this week's episode of Hereabouts, Asian American Midwest Radio. Hereabouts is produced by WFHB Community Radio and Indiana University's Asian Culture Center. We ask critical questions about identity, culture, community, and shared assumptions. We air every other Wednesday from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. in the evening, and we are now on Spotify, so please check us out hereabouts. Please stay tuned for our next episode, and this was Belle and Maya, and we hope you enjoyed this week's episode.